This is Air Commander Starscream, and you are listening to Half Measures. Half Measures? Sounds like Megatron's battle strategy.
Kia ora, and welcome into episode 198 of Half Measures. I'm once again joined by my co-host and friend, Mr. Daniel Whiting King. Kia ora, Dan.
Kia ora, Paul. How are you going today?
Pretty good, pretty good. I've got some things I'm very excited to talk to you about. I've managed to get a wee bit of watching in this week. How about you?
Yeah, I've done the same in between the summer. It's been pretty hot around here. Went for my first swim of the year yesterday, which was... It's a big deal for me. A bit like Anakin Skywalker, kind of hate the sand. Not when I'm actually at the beach. Like, obviously love the sand, and it's like we've got some beautiful sandy beaches around here. But I'm not a fan of the sand afterwards. It's my OCD is too much. I feel like I want to clean the car every time. I definitely need to find, like, you know, somewhere to like wash my feet off to get the sand off. And then, but there's still, you know, sand. It gets everywhere. I understand Anakin's plight. It's
coarse. It's rough. You would not be able to cope. You would be so triggered by our car, because, of course, we live right by the beach. And we do, funny you should say, we have a tap, which I presume is for hoses and doing the garden. I don't get involved in those things. It just basically is like, as soon as you come back, the feet go under the tap before you come in the house type thing.
Mm-hmm. Which is good. There's a few taps around the beach too, and there's a few of those like outdoor shower things, so you can definitely like wash your feet off, but it just gets everywhere. And it's someone said to me, look, this is just part of the package or something at the beach, but it's, you know, it's, people are going to look at me. I can imagine a few people that we know, Paul, are going to be like, this guy is too much. He can't be complaining about sand at the beach, but here I am.
There's that book that's basically writing itself around the places that Dan and Paul would not survive. And I think there's like an addendum or like a new chapter, which is like places which both of us are out of our comfort zone. And the beach, or more to the point, the ocean would definitely be one of yours. I've heard you several times when we've talked about Jaws, when we've talked about many things. The idea of you in the ocean is both... makes me very happy, but also I would love to be there just to see the look in your eye as you're going and thinking... am I going to get bitten?
There's many things that terrify me in the ocean, but the irony is I love the water. Like, I've always been one of those kids that, like, if you got me in a swimming pool or even at the beach, like, once I'm in the water, I'm having the time of my life. I'm a real pool pest. I love to, like, splash around. I love just to, you know, like, if it was a pool, I'd love to be creating whirlpools, doing bombs, doing manus, all that type of stuff.
You're basically Kenny Powers at the pool is what I'm hearing.
Exactly. Yesterday, though, like obviously the beach is very busy at the summer of the year, and we kind of went to the end of the beach, which was a little bit quieter, but there were these kids, and they were constantly like, shark, 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 and I'm like,
no,
and I'm just like, I'm just like on high alert the whole time, and then like, it's going to become inappropriate pod content.
But, I was going to say, I feel like if we had this conversation off air, you would have finished that sentence differently.
But yeah, anyway, it was, the water was very warm. And now that I've cracked the first swim, I think I'll be going back today for round two.
Wow. Did not expect that. I love that. That's good. I feel like we should have done the pod live from the beach or something. Those would have been great.
Too much sand. Would have been frustrated by it. Would have been angry. So yeah, it's going to be good. It's a real good sign of the summer, and yeah, it should be a good time. And like I know that you guys appreciate the beach, so I will add that to my repertoire of activities alongside watching TV with the curtains closed during the summer.
Correct. Too much light is not good for your TV watching. Okay. On the subject of TV watching, Dan, why don't you let us all know what you've been doing this week? What have you been watching?
All right, so I've got a couple of things for you. So I've got a bit of a backlog of things, you know, particularly with our last two episodes being our top shows of 2023. So the first one that I've watched is a bit of a rewatch. This actually goes back to Christmas Eve, Paul, and I was sitting around with the family in my hometown of Hawke's Bay, and sort of the remote was passed to me, find us something to watch. Christmas Eve, I thought, you know what? It's time for a Christmas movie. Let's watch 1988's Die Hard. And it was good, a good value kind of family movie, because everybody's seen Die Hard. Like, you know, you could kind of chat through it. You can have a good kind of like laugh through it. But it's been a while since I've watched Die Hard, particularly the first one. And it's the thing that I always kind of love about Die Hard is obviously there's always the controversy. Is this a Christmas movie? Is it not? And it, for me, it is 100% a Christmas movie because John McClane, Bruce Willis, arrives at his wife's Christmas party. And what type of workplace, Paul, has their work Christmas party on Christmas Eve? Like, this is outrageous. Like, you know. And not only that, is like he gets to the office there. There's people still doing a bit of work. There's wrapping things up. Like, what sort of like toxic work environment is this, where your engagement is, you know, so low? You've got to have this party on Christmas Eve. But no, look, it was a lot of fun. This movie is quite long though. Like, that would probably be my only complaint about this one. Like, 2 hours 12 minutes. Mm. It really kind of. It's the classic kind of 80s, 90s movie where they spend quite a bit of time kind of building up, kind of getting the sort of story right before they kind of bust into the action. And the action does happen relatively quick, but it's a bit of a journey of character building. And obviously, you know, Bruce Willis, you know, he has to befriend his limo driver, he has to befriend the local cop, he has to kind of antagonize all of the terrorists attacking the office building. There's obviously all his like personal relationships with his wife and with his kids. And look, this is a great movie to watch without him just sort of take it too seriously and kind of, you know, like sit down and give it full attention, because it is a movie that we've all seen 100 times. So it was a really enjoyable Christmas Eve watch.
I love this. I think the idea of the office Christmas party on Christmas Eve, that is a terrifying thought. The only way that would possibly work, I guess, would be if Christmas Eve is Friday and everyone's working up until the Friday. Maybe. But even then, 3 o'clock max, you want eight.
like you imagine, Paul, like you're a family man. You want to get home to your family and your kids and all that sort of stuff. You don't want to be stuck at the office, like just dealing with like end of year financial celebrations and big accounts. And it's too much. It's too much. Everyone wants to go home early. Like, they should be letting people go at like lunchtime, 2 o'clock.
And if you're in the Northern Hemisphere as well, I think Christmas Eve evening, if you're real old school, also has that sort of let's go to the shops and buy our Christmas presents and then go home and wrap them for the morning. That's kind of that's also a thing. So there's a number of things here that disturb me. John McClane as a character is just so good. I think of the three movies, I still prefer the Die Hard with a Vengeance movie, but the first one is of course the classic, the Alan Rickman classic. So Christmas watch, I fully support this. I had a manager once whose last name was McClane, and that just for me just really excited me, and I was just brought out all of the yippee-ki-yays all the time. But he was not down with it. In fact, not only was he not down with it, I don't think he'd ever heard of Die Hard or watched it, which really was quite disturbing.
It's a shame. The other thing that's sort of great about these, and we've talked about this with other movies before, is these movies are always a bit of a time capsule of what life was like back in the 80s and 90s. For example, you know, like Bruce McClane travelling on the plane.
Bruce McClane.
Bruce McClane. There you go.
Brother of John.
John McClane, traveling on the plane with, like, you know, he's a cop, but he's like got his gun in his jacket, and the person he's sitting next to sees his gun. And he's like, "Don't worry, I'm a cop." And it's like, you know, you obviously can't travel with a gun on the plane these days. Like, just smoking wherever you want. Like, it's, and even, you know, I don't know if you've noticed, Paul, and I've noticed this on Netflix, and I'm pretty sure I saw it on Disney Plus as well, is in the warnings now. Like, it might be like, this is a, I don't know, R-rated. Scenes of violence, tobacco usage, tobacco usage as kind of a warning trigger is just so fascinating. So, yeah, look, this is a classic, great time of the year to bring it out. Had a good time watching it. It still kind of stands up as a classic as well.
So good. Great start, Dan. Great start.
All right. I'm now, I've, the next movie, Paul, is I'm dipping my hand into the Paul Kanawa lolly jar of old movies. So this is me going even further back in time. 1969. So this is old for me.
Wow.
I had an urge, a desire to watch an old classic Western. And so I watched Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. So this is
outrageous. What a start to our first regular pod.
I know. I've got one more thing after this, which will sort of is a bit more modern, but I don't know what it was. Like, it's been a very long time since I've seen this movie. I think I saw it as a kid the first time. And I just thought, you know what, I might chuck it on. And I kind of chucked it on with the intent that I'll put this on for 10 minutes and it's going to be too old for me. I'm not going to be able to do it. But lo and behold, I was glued to the whole thing. I had a fantastic time. So this is, for anyone who hasn't seen it, spoilers, this is set in the 1890s in Wyoming. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid lead a band of outlaws. When a train robbery goes wrong, they find themselves on the run with a posse hard on their heels. After considering their options, they escape to South America. And so this stars, obviously, Paul Newman as Butch Cassidy and Robert Redford as the Sundance Kid. So they are very young in this movie.
Yeah.
But this is all the things that are a classic Western. It's got great chases. It's got great dialogue. There's great sort of banter between everyone. In fact, if anything, it kind of left me wanting to play Red Dead Redemption on PlayStation afterwards, because it really just kind of brought about that sort of that cowboy element.
Right.
And I think what kind of I think what sort of made it great was, though it's kind of it's obviously like, what is this 30, 40, like 50 plus years old as a movie, it's still kind of it kind of worked. And I think it's such a great movie just about, like, in this watch for me, so kind of the friendship between our two main characters and kind of how they were just, like, you know, thick as thieves, as they say, but they were kind of not really bad guys. They were kind of like good guys doing bad things. And it was just I remember this movie being really, really sad as a kid when watching this. And it's still kind of like, you know, ends kind of sad as well, because it's kind of, you just go on such a journey with these two characters as they've been kind of chased across the landscape. But this is a really fun watch. And I don't know whether it's going to re-spark sort of a wider Western sort of desire, but I had a really good time.
Absolutely fantastic, Dan. This is a much loved movie for me. The two movies that they're most famous for, this one and The Sting, I've watched many, many times. Big fan of both actors. Catherine Ross is also very, very good in this. I was just looking on our website then, which, if you are looking for specific movies, you know, you can go into our A to Z, which you can also sort by year. What a great tool this is on our website. There are 21 movies that have been reviewed on this podcast between 1936 and 1977. All 21 of those have been reviewed by me, and now DWUK is coming right in there with this incredible surprise for me straight at the start of the year with a 1969 watch. I'm absolutely stoked. It is a cult classic. The theme music is just now forever, no matter where I hear it, in what context, is just always Butch Cassidy. The dynamic between the two is just so strong. It's a real Sunday afternoon type watch. And yeah, I get your sort of wanting to go playing a Western gaming game. It's really, I want to say, I don't know if wholesome is the right word because of what they're doing and also how it ends. But there's something about that bond between the two of them that's just so heartwarming. It's just a wonderful movie.
Yeah, it is. I think there's something kind of charming to it, and I think the banter that they kind of have between one another, there's just something about it that really works. And I think Robert Redford's character, the Sundance Kid, is he's kind of the sharpshooter. He's kind of a bit more stoic and quiet, whereas Paul Newman's Butch Cassidy is kind of the schemer, the plotter, he's kind of the face of a lot of the conversations. And I think just between the two of them, it really works. And as you say, it's a good shout out for Catherine Ross. Like, she has a great role to play in this as well. But Yeah, look, it really works. It kind of, when the movie started off, it kind of starts off in this kind of sepia tone, and I was like, is this whole movie kind of going to be in sepia? Like, what's going on? And then it kind of, it switches the full colour, and I think what it kind of surprised me is the actual effects in this and the action scenes all seem pretty good. Like, there was one scene where they're blowing up a safe on a train, and they use way too much dynamite, and it blows up so close to their face.
Yes.
I don't even, like, I'm thinking 1969, like, you know, I don't know what special effects were used here, but there was a pretty big explosion, and it looked like, you know, they almost took a face full of timber. But, yeah, no, look, it was good. I had a really good time. It was a surprise and delight. It definitely scratched an itch that I was looking for. So had a good time. Found this one on Disney Plus.
I'm just going to say this once. If anyone out there knows where the real Dan Whiting King is, if they could please just message me privately, because so far we've got you watching movies from the 60s. We've got you in the ocean. I what's next? Can you bring back something that's 2023 or more modern and just return to form, please?
All right. My final thing that I'm going to bring you today, so that I don't consume the whole podcast, apart from our joint watch, is... So I recently took a long flight, and I had a bit of time on my hands, and there's been a TV show that I've been looking to watch. It's a Netflix one, 2021, called Midnight Mass, and it's a Mike Flanagan story. He's got some amazing shows under his belt on Netflix, and I've played the trailer a couple of times for Samara. no bite, Paul, no bite. So she's like, no, this one's all you. And so I thought, you know what, I've heard it's a little bit of a slow burn series, so I thought perfect time on a flight, I'll just jump into it. And I got absolutely hooked, smashed this out pretty much mostly on the flight, and this is good. I really slept on this. I think if I had watched this in 2021 when it released, it probably would have been in a top 10 list. Mm. And what's kind of inspired me is because there's his latest series, The Fall of
Usher.
Mm. I've heard some really good things about that, and I haven't watched it yet, so it kind of missed the boat for the 2023 top show, so I thought I'd better catch up. So I'll give you a bit of a rundown of this one. So this is basically about an isolated community who experience a whole bunch of miraculous events and some frightening omens after the arrival of a charismatic and mysterious young priest. And so... this is only 7 episodes, but I love a good sort of, like, this is a mini series. This is kind of a one and done. I love it's kind of like sometimes loose sort of nods to the wider universe that Mike Flanagan's creating. I think this is a show that, to be honest, it takes till around episode 3 to kind of really get going. Like, up until then, you're kind of like, what am I kind of in for? But I think if you can put in the time, you're going to get the rewards. And so without sort of spoiling it too much for anyone that hasn't seen it, so this is sort of the plot said, it's at this small sort of like fishing village. It's sort of about 100-ish people who live on this little island. There's a boat that sort of goes twice a day back to the mainland. A lot of people on this island, are part of the church. As this new priest arrives, as it sort of said, like there's a whole bunch of things that start happening. I think Mike Flanagan is a bit of a master of sort of like horror and jump scares and sort of good storytelling. I think in Midnight Mass, he kind of swaps out the sort of the jump scares and the horror for sort of the almost kind of like deeper storytelling. It kind of, it's a story that kind of leaves you sort of wondering and sort of with questions and kind of making up your own call around it. But, you know, there's a whole bunch of interesting characters on the island. They've all got kind of different things that start happening. And the main sort of plot is, you know, there's various people on the island with sort of different challenges. Like one of our main characters, and this sort of happens in the first episode, is he spent some time in jail. He killed someone while drink driving. There's other people on the island, you know, someone who's in a wheelchair. There's people that are sort of suffering for grief and loneliness. We've got Rahul Kohli, who's a fantastic actor. He plays a character called Sheriff Hassan. He's of sort of a Muslim faith. And it kind of just it plays out these different scenarios of how different people's faith plays out on a largely kind of Catholic island. These miracles start happening. For example, I'll just give you one of the girl in the wheelchair, you know, gains the ability to walk again. And it's all kind of just shrouded in kind of mystery and miracles and what people believe and don't believe. So if this is kind of sparking any kind of interest for you, this is a really good, dark, slow burn TV show. And I had a lot of fun with it.
This is definitely more PCU, Dan, than Butch Cassidy. This is definitely what I expect from you. This looks good. This is Mike Flanagan, who, as you say, is a master of this sort of thing. And I know you've enjoyed a number of his, you know, The Haunting of Hill House, Bly Manor. We watched Doctor Sleep together. I think we both enjoyed that. He's got a real genre. He's one of those sort of I don't want to sort of typecast him, but yeah, he definitely has a focus and when you look at the photos of this, there's a definite color scheme to it that feels in line with that as well. Interesting though that it's not the jump scare type approach, and that would have been fun if you were watching this on a plane, especially if it was, you know, like when it's the nighttime and they lower the cabin lights and you're just there with just got this vision of you just jumping and waking up half the cabin. But there's obviously less of that going on in this one, right?
There is less of that. Just on that note, a slight tangent. I did watch a stand-up comedy as well on the plane, and I was laughing to myself when I was shaking the aisle off the seats, by, you know, like trying to quiet laugh. And Samara keeps looking at me like, what, you're shaking the seat? Because I'm just But anyway, I think, jump scares on the plane, maybe not so ideal. It's kind of a tough one to recommend because I don't think it's a show for everyone, but I think it's if some of those characteristics, I think, like, if you like Mike Flanagan's other work, if you like a good slow burn, if you like a good sort of, like, deep character kind of dive into a small group of people, like, this has got a lot of stuff that I think a lot of people will like, but I think the entry point is quite hard because, and I read this actually afterwards, I was, you know, doing a little bit of kind of like help me understand the ending. And a lot of people kind of talked about, actually it took to about episode 3 for me to kind of really kind of like get into this TV show and decide it was for me, because nothing overly really happens until that point apart from kind of character development. So, I had a lot of fun with this one.
And also starring Kate Siegel, which I've noticed she stars in a lot of stuff that he makes, right? So, yeah.
Well, there's a lot of great, you know.
Oh, she's married to him. I'm just clicked on her bio. Okay, that explains that.
He uses a lot of the same cast, like Rahul. He does the same with Rahul. He's in a lot of, I think, Haunting of Bly Manor, and there's a lot of crossover characters, not obviously playing the same people, a lot of crossover actors, I should say. So, and I really like that, the way that he uses and reuses sort of cast members in his shows. I think obviously he's kind of sort of builds up a good relationship with them, and he kind of knows how to get the best out of them for these different roles. So definitely I probably slept on this a little bit too long. I know I've wanted to watch it for a long time, so I was pretty glad to be able to sit down and do that.
Also starring Zach Guilford, who's quite good as well. Not to be confused with the New Zealand rugby union player, Zach Guilford.
Indeed. So, yeah, check that one out on Netflix if you are interested.
Very good. Is that everything, Dan, for you?
That is me for this week, Paul. How about yourself?
So I have a couple of things as well, and I think I'm going to be relatively quick on a couple of these because I've got a rewatch in here. I've got a series that you've talked about a lot, and I've got, first up, the Doctor Who Christmas special, and I've talked a lot about Doctor Who, so I won't labour the point, but this was our first story with Shuti Gatwa in his first you know, full-fledged, kind of like a pilot. So each Doctor, whenever they sort of start, they kind of get their first story, their first pilot, which is always fun. So this one is called The Church on Ruby Road, which aired here in New Zealand on Boxing Day and was a Christmas Day evening watch in the UK and Europe. So this one, long ago on Christmas Eve, a baby was abandoned in the snow, and today Ruby Sunday meets the Doctor, stolen babies, goblins, and perhaps the secret of her birth. And so this introduces not only our first Doctor who we met, with the bi-generation that we talked about last year with David Tennant, but also our first look at our new companion, played by Millie Gibson, Ruby Sunday. Both really, really good. Great episode. Shitty Gatwa has ditched the Y fronts that he sort of quite boldly wore in his bi-generation scene and has a real snazzy outfit. He's a very happy Doctor. His demeanor is one of the happiest, I would say, since Matt Smith, who is, as I've said before, is one of my absolute favorites. It's a very deliberate decision, of course, how they cast the Doctor and how they write the Doctor's demeanor. And I think it's probably too soon for them to do anyone like a grumpy Doctor, like a Peter Capaldi type, which I really enjoy, but a grumpy Doctor can be very divisive. And this casting is superb between both Shuddy Gatwa and Millie Gibson. There's already a great dynamic. A lot of swashbuckling fun in this episode. Real easy watch, 55 minutes. Definitely recommend.
Very good. So this is the sort of the, well, it's not the intro of this character, because you kind of got him in those three other episodes, didn't you, or the last episode of the, what do we call, well, the other one?
In the last episode where David Tennant split into the two Doctors, and that was that we had our first look at him, and we sort of got a bit of time with him, but not a fully fledged story. So this is it's kind of laying the groundwork, setting up the scene, setting up new relationships and the backstories. So really encouraging. This companion, I think she has the potential to be one of the more interesting of late, possibly for me, since Amy Pond, the character who was opposite Matt Smith's Doctor. So yeah, it's bright, it's colourful, there's music, it's very upbeat. There's a great new theme music as well, by the way, that's really growing on me. This was sort of a mixed reaction is sort of what I've seen from the Whoniverse in terms of what the fan base thinks about it. There's a number of things that some fans are sort of, some people are saying is, you know, too, you know, they're trying to take the Doctor too far, having him, you know, with these, some of these dancing scenes and there's a number of sort of, number of boomers out there, I think, who are missing their old classic Who. I think I'll just leave it at that. But yeah, I'm really, really enjoying it. And yeah, I think we now have to wait till May until we have the series proper start again. So no more Doctor Who from me, Dan, for at least five months, which may be for a relief for some people.
I was going to say, when do we sort of kick into season 14 proper? So I guess that gives people a little bit of time to get up to speed and watch this. So what do we call the three episodes that you watched in between? Are they season 13, or are they like special?
All four of them are classified as specials. All four of them available to sort of rewatch here on Disney Plus. But they sit between the series. So series 13, series 14, yeah, they sit as they are, as standalones. And the good thing about that is it gives you an opportunity to come in and just pick and choose which you want to watch quite easily. So that's the first thing I've got. The second thing I wanted to talk to you about, and as I say, this is a series you've talked about just last week in our top 10 podcast. Plus you also talked about the original run. So I won't, you know, we've said a lot about it. This is Succession season 2. And it's interesting because a few people have inquired of me in recent weeks about Succession. And I have a go-to line when people ask me, and I'll use it again here, this is a brilliant show about the most dislikable group of people, all of whom have been cast perfectly. It's that really sums up everything about Succession for me. And I guess the proof is in the pudding as well, because three of the cast won awards at this week's Golden Globes. So it's just an incredible watch. It really is a really strong second season. I always wonder, you know, between one, I know one was hot and four has obviously got all the ratings. I wondered where we went with two and three. Two is really good. All the backstabbing, the double crossing, these guys only act for themselves, the greed, money, they just trample over anyone. They leave people behind like garbage if it doesn't benefit them or the company. It's such an addictive binge watch type show. I can't stand any of the characters as people, and I am excited. I'm sort of waiting for what you said will happen, where you sort of say as you get deep into the show, the people that you felt one way about it in one season, you feel differently about it the next. That's yet to happen for me for two seasons. I still don't like any of them. I love watching them though. Logan Roy is still my favorite. Brian Cox, unforgiving, insults everyone. He treats his family as bad as his staff. But the family is so good.
Will you be having at your next team meeting, having a bore on the floor session? Or
bore on the floor, my goodness. I mean, this is, funnily enough, there's someone I've been talking to who's also right up to season two, and we both just said bore on the floor, and they're just both like, just the humiliation that they will make people go through, and the power, the position of power, and it's just unbelievable. Shiv is horrible. Kendall is weak. Connor is absolutely mental. Roman is perhaps a TV character I hate more than anyone, but it's all down to spectacular performances. So, you know, you've got Sarah Snook, Jeremy Strong, Alan Ruck, Kieran Culkin, terrific performances, honestly. But my favourite remains after the season, again with season two, Matthew McFadyen as Tom. I just find him so much fun to watch. He's this spineless roach of a human who just, he wants in on this whole family. He's my pick for the second season. And yeah, as I say, seeing him get a Golden Globe this week as well, 100% deserved for where I'm sitting.
I think Tom and Greg are like classic characters that you can kind of rely on throughout every season. But it's the core family members who I fall in and out of love with all the time. And in particular, like, I always struggled a lot with Roman, but that sort of changes in the later season. But Kendall's someone who I'm like, you're the worst, you're the best, you're the worst, you're the best, even though they're all scumbags.
Yeah, there's a number of things in this season which I think are worth just calling out as well, which are just great episodes. This is where I'm just looking at the ratings online. Yeah, just nines, 9.3, 9, 8.7. We've got the entire Roy clan traveling to Dundee, the Logan hometown, you know, for a celebration of his 50 years, and he has no idea it's happening. And his reaction at walking in is the most displeased anyone could ever be at a surprise party. Connor he's announced himself for presidency. I mean, this guy's a lunatic. He's the loosest cannon of all. The episode where Roman goes on that management training program in the Parks Division, just comedy gold. And then, of course, the big finale, which was superb, with the where they all have to testify before Congress. Logan, Kendall, Jerry, Tom, and then Craig, whatever he's calling himself, comes on the stand, and he has no clue what truth or lie he's supposed to hide. It's a really strong season. And what I'm doing at the moment, Dan, is I'm watching a season, I'm reflecting on it and letting it marinate, and then I'm switching to Ozark. And then when I finish the next Ozark, I'll go back to that's where I'm going between those two shows you recommended to me. And it's each time I switch between the shows, I immediately miss the other one, and I'm like, oh. But then within two episodes, I'm like, oh, this is good. So I'll be bringing Ozark back soon as well. But yeah, Succession available here in New Zealand on Neon, and just really, really good.
I love this.
I said I wouldn't talk for too long. There I go, breaking my promises. I'll be quick here then. Final thing for me, Dan. Obi-Wan Kenobi. Rewatch. This is a show that you and I watched and both had in our top tens for 2022. Alongside Andor, this is a Star Wars show that I've wanted to rewatch for a while. Andor, I think I'll wait, you know, until season two is about to come out so we can have a refresher. But as a miniseries, Obi-Wan Kenobi, I wanted to watch this back to back because we watched it weekly, of course. I wanted it back to back, lights out, dark, popcorn. And what's funny is if you don't watch the very lengthy credits at the end of each episode, all up, this is actually less than 4 hours. And so we watched this over two nights. And honestly, this is incredible in one go. And because it's a rewatch and you don't have the tension of the, oh, I wonder what will happen, like you do with the first watch, you just get to sit back and properly enjoy it and soak it in. And I cannot recommend this rewatch enough.
That's good. I really contemplated this is the plane watch as well, because I'm with you. Like, I think all of these Star Wars series are like this, because you and I have done this for years, where we kind of like dream up kind of where these shows are going, potential characters that might pop in. But I think having now, you know, kind of knowing the overall plot line and kind of just being more along for the journey, I imagine it's such a better watch.
It really is. And for anyone who's a classic Star Wars fan and sort of could say, oh, I watched the old three movies, you know, the original trilogy in the 80s, but I haven't seen anything since. You could watch this because this is for me Darth Vader at his most terrifying in this. And that includes Rogue One, which of course we've talked about as well. I think the Vader factor in this, the return of James Earl Jones as the voice, and whatever they did with the computer technology to make that voice sound so young as well as he was in the 70s and 80s, is exceptional. What they do with Vader and the fear factor that he brings, chasing down, you know, a prime Vader chasing down a depressed Obi-Wan who's left behind the Force, who's been beaten, is such a great backlog. As a Star Wars miniseries, this is a first, and it really got me thinking, what, you know, there are lots of Star Wars series out there and character movies, but what would make a great Star Wars self-contained one time only miniseries? And I'm curious to what you might think. I'll let you have a think for a while I sort of, you know, in case anything comes to mind. But for me, I'd be really keen to see a series set between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. That's a relatively unexplored piece of time. You know, we've got so much stuff before the trilogy and after and all that. But actually between the first two movies, that, you know, where it all started, what happened, how from blowing up the Death Star to arriving on the ice planet of Hoth, something that bridges the gap between those two movies, I think that would be really good. Or my other alternative would be I'd like a miniseries set just before Force Awakens that gives us a little bit of the battle of Jakku and had the remnants of the Empire fall. I think that how the First Order came to be, a little bit more about that would be pretty interesting too. But yeah, miniseries, I think it's the way to go. And I know there's some news this week in the Star Wars universe, but a miniseries really appeals.
I like that. I think there's two things that come to mind for me. One would be, you know, I'm a big fan of the Dark Disciple Star Wars book, you know, Basically about Asajj Ventress. And there's some great, like, Count Dooku moments in there, which would just be fantastic to see. But I wonder whether that might be a little bit niche and maybe better suited to an animated miniseries. But when something that just kind of weirdly came to mind, and I don't know if it fully worked, but I imagine between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, a Guy Ritchie-style heist movie about trying to save Han Solo and, like, different people trying to attempt it, but all those heists going wrong. Yeah,
that would be great.
Just kind of actually the prep and the planning that they need to sort of go into it, and just kind of – it might not be satisfying because it wouldn't be successful without missing out the Return of the Jedi, but just something about kind of, you know – Luke's off, you know, doing his thing. We need to try and get Han back. Like, there's, you know, Leia trying to, like, get some schemes cooking, Lando getting involved. Like, I don't know. It feels like there's a whole bunch of great kind of stories from Jabba's Palace and sort of around that era that could be quite fun.
That would be a lot of fun. I've often thought, could you bring in a signature style director into a universe like Star Wars or like Star Trek? Because, of course, Quentin Tarantino was scheduled to direct the next Star Trek movie for some time, and that all fell by the wayside. And that would have brought in a, you know, when I say a signature director, Guy Ritchie would fall into that. You know, if we brought a Guy Ritchie style Star Wars, would that work or would it break it? I don't know, but I'd be excited to see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's, there's a lot of options, isn't there? I guess the one thing, you know, just with the option I was saying before is actually, you know, we've said this before, is we want to get away from Tatooine. So anything that, like, you know, maybe we need to go to a new planet, but I feel like anything between A New Hope and Empire, or Empire and Jedi, like, there's still so many untold stories kind of in that space that would be great to get into. And in a way, would it be great to get into some of these side characters that don't have any attachment to our main characters?
Correct. Some great ideas.
Very good.
Some ideas that we've come up with, I dare say, are perhaps better than some of the ideas which have been talked about in the last 18 months. But anyway, but just briefly back to Obi-Wan, just as I say, really worth it. It really made me reappreciate the Vivian Lyra Bear performances, the young Princess Leia, her and Obi-Wan together. So good. I think she really captures the essence of Leia at such a young age. And it really makes me then reappreciate that, you know, if you think about the first movie, the classic 1977 Princess Leia message to Obi-Wan that Luke finds inside R2-D2, yeah, just like, you know, years ago you served me, like, this is the backstory to some of that. So that was great. Owen and Beru, seeing them not the weak farmers that we always thought they were, just in A New Hope, just the grumpy, you know, actually their story. The Grand Inquisitor character, Rupert Friend, really, really good. This rewatch really made me appreciate Reva, the Inquisitor Reva, really made me appreciate her story a lot more. Moses Ingram did a terrific job, and she got a lot of very uncalled for criticism for her performance. But actually, following her story within a 4-hour rewatch as a youngling, sort of being slayed by Anakin, but then sort of basically pretending to be dead, and then her redemption story to sort of come back to the end. Really, really good. So if you've watched this before, I would definitely recommend it as a rewatch. If you haven't watched it before, this is gold sitting there waiting for you, and that's on Disney Plus.
Has it inspired you to want to rewatch any other, like, you know, I know you said you'd wait for Andor, but maybe an Ahsoka or anything like that? Or
I feel like no? I'm inspired. I feel like my watch list is so out of control in terms of things I want to watch that the rewatches are a real luxury. You know, I was thinking about this, I've only recently rewatched in the last 2 years two things. I think this is one, the other was the whole of Better Call Saul. I don't think I've rewatched too much else. And it's a real time thing. Like, there's so many things I would love to rewatch. But if I was to, I probably would shock you and some other listeners. I would actually go back for Book of Boba Fett, because that was, again, something that I watch weekly. And I feel like as a binge watch, I feel like that would be quite an interesting watch as well. That would be me. What about you? Where would you go if you were rewatching?
It's so tough, because I could easily find myself jumping back into a Rebels as well, just as much. But I think I'm really keen to do an Andor rewatch. But I think because we might have quite a bit of a delay on that, I could still maybe squeeze that in this year at some point. Look, I would give any of them a go again, because I think I think we might be a little bit dry on Star Wars content this year. Like, there is a few things coming, but I could see myself, yeah, giving anyone. I'd even give The Mandalorian another sort of all three seasons ago. And I would probably like pair that up then with the Book of Boba Fett, just to kind of, I kind of consider that a season 2.5.
Yeah, fair call.
Yeah. Yeah, so many options. Oh, that's good, Paul. I'm glad you enjoyed that rewatch.
Did indeed. But yeah, other than our watch of the week, that's me, Dan.
Cool. Well, shall we jump into our watch of the week? So each week, Paul and I take turns choosing different movies, TV shows to watch. If you want to find out what those are, you can join our Discord channel. We try to sort of plan it out for at least sort of 4 or 5 weeks in advance. Every now and again, we need to shuffle things around if we, for whatever reason, comes up. But this week, we have got, what have we got? We've got Rebel Moon. And then next week, we will be doing Slow Horses Season 3. So if you want to find out what we've been watching, you want to watch it in sync with us so that we don't do any spoilers, that is the place to find that information. But yeah, this week, we are checking out Rebel Moon.
Yeah, so Rebel Moon Part 1, A Child of Fire, directed by Zack Snyder and written by him as well. When a peaceful settlement on the edge of a distant moon find itself threatened by the armies of a tyrannical ruling force, a mysterious stranger living amongst its villagers becomes their best hope for survival.
Oh, Paul. I really had some high hopes for this one. I think I need to watch it again, to be honest with you, and I will watch it again before we watch Part 2. I really want to believe Zack Snyder, like I really do, but
thanks, Ted.
I don't know. I just found this a little bit of a hot mess, to be fair. You know, you can't help but obviously see the Star Wars connection, and you can see where they were kind of going with a, hey, this could have been a Star Wars movie, but we've pitched it to Lucasfilm and they don't want it, so we're going to go our own direction. I don't know, Paul. I just don't even know where to begin. This is a story about Nazis trying to take over rice fields and get grain for their starships. There's some impressive fight scenes and there's some terrible fight scenes, and so it kind of has these weird moments for me of like kind of interesting. Every now and again I'd be like, oh yeah, this is cool, we're doing some classic Zack Snyder kind of like slow motion action scenes. Then it was kind of like slow motion on top of slow motion. Some of the characters were great, some of them were quite forgettable. I'll tell you, one of the things that actually has annoyed me the most about this film, and it wasn't even in the film, is it's kind of like as soon as this film dropped that Zack Snyder's like, hey guys, I'm going to do the Zack Snyder director cut. Zack, you're the director. The cut that we're watching should be the Zack Snyder Correct. Director cut. Correct. And I kind of just feel like it's too soon for you to be saying that, like, there's another version that I really want you guys to see. Like, it just kind of felt a little bit on the nose. Like, I'll definitely be back for Part 2. I welcome sort of new content, but I just kind of sat through this movie and I was just like, I don't know if I'm having a good time or not. I definitely don't think I'm having a great time, but it just kind of felt a bit all over the place. I'm really ranting. How did you feel about this one?
It's really interesting, eh? Because I'd heard so much hate about the movie before coming in, and I'd seen some poor reviews, and I'd sort of not read anything because I didn't want to spoil it for myself. I would say that it felt a bit like, I guess if I'm going to start on the negative, it did feel a bit like a jigsaw puzzle with some pieces missing. So not all of those connections were clear in terms of the story. And I, like, it's not a paint by numbers script, you know, and maybe that will get cleared up with Part 2. I don't know. Is there a Part 3? Was it just two parts? I don't know. I have no idea.
I don't know. I think they're probably going for like a wider kind of series, but there's at least a Part 2. I'll Google that while you're talking.
Yeah. That was really my only sort of problem, and sort of thinking about the Zack Snyder cut coming, thinking, well, it's like they're going to fill in the blanks of some of the leaps they make. But I didn't have too much issue with that. And as a result, I actually really, really enjoyed it. And I think potentially because I had such low expectations, this is the new thing for me. I think the more I go into something and it's not anticipated to be great, sometimes the better time I can have. I don't know. I thought it was, as you said, great action, great visuals. I thought there were some great ideas in here. I thought there were some really awesome cast performances. In particular, the two I have to call out, Sophie Boutella as in that lead role. I thought she was great as Cora. I've sort of really mainly seen her in Star Trek and in Kingsman. But the guy I really had to call out, the one who really I thought was sensational, was Ed Skrein. I've only ever seen him we did a movie of the week for Midway a way back. I've seen him in that, and I saw him in Alita Battle Angel that we both did a movie of the week on as well. But he was, for me, as Atticus Noble, as the lead Nazi, I thought he was just so, so good. I thought all of the bad guys were so good. They were the sort that really got my blood boiling kind of characters. And it was really, really satisfying to have these evil, hateable villains, because it meant that when they got taken out, that was even more satisfying. And wow, Sophia Boutella really was brutal when she was taking these guys out. It was just, I really found that quite, popcorn-y, great storytelling, action type stuff. I really, really enjoyed it. But I know what you're saying in terms of it felt like Star Wars. There was a lot of things it reminded me of. You know, there was things from Star Wars. There was things from almost Lord of the Rings, Blade Runner to Avatar. You know, like when the guy has to ride the, you know, it's kind of felt like we've seen this sort of thing before. So I know what you mean there, but I don't know. I just had fun. Maybe it was because I was on holiday. I don't know.
Maybe. I think the bit that was like most Star Wars-y on the nose for me was the scene in the cantina when and it was like, oh, this is too much. It didn't even worry me that it kind of felt Star Wars-y. I kind of just – what I'm hoping is that when we see part two, we kind of get more of a complete story. I think for me it just kind of felt – we've kind of got some interesting characters. There's maybe too many interesting characters. And then we're kind of rushing around building up a team. And I'm hoping that kind of delivers in the second movie. The good thing is that we don't have long to wait for that second movie because it's been shot back to back. We're going to get it in April. I did a quick search. Zach is hoping to do about 4 movies. I think he's hoping to sort of turn this into quite a big franchise. Yeah,
that
look,
will depend on the success of 2, probably, I imagine.
Yeah,
whether we get
it
4.
Probably will. I really wanted to like this and really, like, I was quite excited for this, and I think I maybe had my expectations set a little bit too high. I did try to avoid trailers. The cast alone, as you said, there's some fantastic actors in here. I even loved Anthony Hopkins as the robot Jimmy. Like, he was fantastic. I really hope we see, obviously, more of Jimmy in the second movie. But, yeah, I can't quite put my finger on it. I just sort of felt like it was long, but it was rushed all at the same time. And I think this is where, actually, would it have been better, and this is just such a classic half-measure statement, actually, rather than having it as a movie, would it have been better as maybe, you know, you've got 2 movies, should this have been like an 8-part series or something and kind of broken more into chapters so it kind of felt a little bit more, I don't know, rounded out or...
I think that's a fair shout. I think that is a fair shout. I will also ask anyone who's listening if they've got that on their 2024 Half Measures bingo card. You can cross that off as the first time you've heard that on the pod, because that's a favourite of ours. I also second what you said about Anthony Hopkins. I thought he was good as the voice of the robot Jimmy. Like, if you'd said to me, because I didn't know going in, if you'd said to me, oh, Anthony Hopkins' voice is a droid, I would say, really? Is that? I just don't know. He's fantastic, and we love him. But would I see him as? He was great. Charlie Hunnam as Kai. Well, I guess we're talking a bit spoilish here, but yeah. As soon as he came on board, I felt like now we're a team, and now we're really going to smash some things. And then of course the twists with his character were quite good. I did, talking about things that were similar, I did have a little bit of a similar sort of flashback in my mind. You know, a character, I need to put together a group of people to bring justice to this world. It did feel a little similar to Zack Snyder's Justice League, you know, with Bruce Wayne having to do the same, but again, I don't know. There's so many similarities. There's a dude in it called Stuart Martin who, for the first 5 minutes, I was like, is that Hugh Jackman? He just, the way he was cast and looked, he just looked exactly the same. But I'm not saying this is the greatest thing. I did start to roll my eyes a little bit when, Atticus's character was revealed at the end. He's back. But to be honest, as I said, I found him such an enjoyable bad guy. I'm really keen to see him back with more great one-liners. He had some real good comedy, evil comedy that I've not seen him in much. I thought he was absolutely superb.
Yeah, look, I don't know. I think I'm going to have to rewatch it before part two so that it kind of feels like it kind of flows together. I think even now, my ability to kind of tell you a detailed story about what actually happened in this is almost quite challenging. Apart from assembling a team of people to defend a village, like, it feels like it's simple but complex at the same time. And I think one other thing for me is, apart from the actual actors and actresses, the actual characters themselves are kind of not memorable to me, which is kind of a weird thing to say on a movie that's sort of tried to be quite kind of character driven. And I, even looking at the poster, there's so much going on in that poster. But I guess, you know, that's a Star Wars poster, right? And we wouldn't complain about that. So maybe I'm being a little bit too hard on it. I think its rating on IMDb of sort of 5.6 is, like, it's probably about a 6 for me. But it's interesting that it's a number 2 on the popularity at the moment.
Yeah, this second part, I think you're right. I think that's going to be the make or break for, is it going to bring people together and say, okay, yeah, I'm on board now, or is it going to be like, that's it, I'm done with it? And if there's too many people that are in that camp, will Zach actually get parts 3 and 4? Be interesting to see.
I wonder where it's sitting actually on you might have it open on Rotten Tomatoes at the moment.
Oh, Rotten Tomatoes, okay.
Yeah, on the critics score. And the reason I say that is, So it's got 23% on the tomato meter, but the audience score is at 59%. But I guess what it's going to come down to for Netflix is how many eyeballs are on it. It almost probably doesn't even matter.
Correct.
What that score is. It probably does a little bit, but it'll be the number of views, which will be the most important thing to them. So, yeah, interesting times. I'm glad the wait isn't too long. April feels like a not too bad a thing.
This is 3 guns for me, Dan.
3 guns?
Mm.
In slow motion?
I just had fun. Yeah, there's a lot of slow motion with the guns. But I guess we have sort of, maybe we haven't talked enough about the style in terms of the directorial style. That does have that Zack Snyder feel, that there were a lot of moments which felt clearly his style. And I have to admit to being a fan of that. So perhaps that's also brought me up to that third gun rating. What about you?
Yeah, it's funny because I think that Zack Snyder's style is so him. And I don't mind the slow motion either. Like, I think, like, there's something cool about slow motion, and does he overuse it? Probably. But I think it kind of works for a lot of these fight scenes. I think for me, I'm probably at about 1.5 guns. I'm coming in low.
Cross that off on the bingo card too.
Indeed. But yeah, as I say, I haven't given up on it, and I will give it another watch. I really hope that, you know, maybe with part two, we've had the character building, and now we kind of get into actually a really great story for the second part. But time will tell.
Well, that is our watch of the week. As Dan said, it's on Netflix, and yeah, next week's watch of the week, season 3 of Slow Horses. So you've got a week to catch up. Dan, what's your pick of the week?
I think I'm going to have to go with Midnight Mass. It was a tough call between that and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, but I think I'm going to have to go with the more modern take. And as I say, this is another Netflix series. Great sleeper show. If you're a fan of Mike Flanagan and you haven't checked it out yet, I think add it to your list. How about yourself?
Controversially, I'm going with Rebel Moon. It's hard because I kind of have an internal rule, you know, as a BA, I have the, where I'm like, this is Obi-Wan was fantastic. It's a rewatch. Succession is fantastic, but it's part of a wider thing. Doctor Who, I'm watching all the time. And so these are things I love. And so when I look back on that and think of all the things I watched, actually, that was the new thing that was really, that really got me thinking and got me, when I came to sit down to do this pod with you, the thing on my mind the most was Rebel Moon. And that kind of tells me what my pick of the week is. So yeah, so that's the final podcast.
Wow. This is where we end. We don't quite crack the 200.
No, shame.
Shall I take us on over to the news desk?
Yeah.
All right. So we've got a few things on the news desk today. So first of all, old mate Tom Cruise, he has partnered with Warner Brothers for a strategic partnership where they'll be working together to work on new content, new movies. They'll co-develop, co-create. Tom will star in them, which I think will be interesting. Look, I'm a fan of Tom Cruise. I think when he casts himself in the right roles, like sometimes, you know, like we can't go past when he casts himself as Jack Reacher and it just wasn't right. But I think in general, I'm a fan. I'm keen [S2] Same. [S1] To see what he does. It'll be interesting to see how this partnership works. And I think it's a pretty big catch, I imagine, for a company like Warner Brothers to kind of lock in someone like Tom Cruise. So should be very interesting. What else have we got here? So a little bit of Star Wars news. So Ahsoka Season 2 is officially in development, which is interesting. We did kind of, you know, debate, is this a miniseries? Mm. Will they continue it through The Mandalorian? Will it come together in the movie? Great news for Ahsoka fans. I think there's still obviously lots to tell. We've got some fantastic newer characters, the live action there, which we definitely want to see more of. And also we've had a kind of a surprise announcement, from my point of view anyway, of the Mandalorian and Grogu movie, which will be coming soon, directed by Jon Favreau. So interesting. What do you think about this one?
It's exciting because we've talked about The Mandalorian at length in terms of how incredible season one was. Season two with the epic finale, fantastic. Season three was good, but it just didn't quite hit the mark the same. So by going to the movie theater, for me, they're forcing themselves to come out with something big. And I think that's good, because there's no place for filler in The Mandalorian. It's got to be the best. And so I am happier with a Mandalorian movie than potentially carrying on the series for too long, is how I feel.
Interesting, because we know these other movies as well, kind of bringing all of this universe together. So I presume this is one of the movies doing that, not the movie doing that, but I guess time will tell.
I think you're right, yeah.
Next bit of news. So HBO, for The Last of Us Season 2, has found its next main character. A big character for Season 2 is a woman called Abby, for those of you that have played the video game. And they have cast Caitlin Dever as Abby. Now, Paul, we know her from a miniseries we watched called Unbelievable. She's also starred in, you know, a few great movies like Booksmart. So really looking forward to seeing where season two goes. Great that they've started to do some of that big casting. Looking forward to seeing how that kind of plays out. Marvel has just dropped its latest TV show and first of the TV shows for 2024. And this is a TV show called Echo. And what's kind of interesting about this one is it's their first kind of like mature M-rated TV show, so a little bit slightly darker, and they've dropped all six episodes all at once, which I think is fantastic. And it's, you know, I just want to, you know, check your interest level, Paul. Also, it's going to sort of build on some of the Daredevil work, so we'll be seeing some Charlie Cox in there as well. So this could be a great show to get into, particularly as we sort of start to move towards a new Daredevil TV show. So definitely looking forward to checking out that one.
I'm definitely interested. I mainly from the point of view that I, in terms of Daredevil, I love the cast. I thought it was that side of things. When it comes to Marvel, you know, I love the Luke Cage stuff. I love all of that. So I would definitely be here for this. And also, it's got one of the best characters, Vincent. Never know how to pronounce his last name, D'Onofrio. His, you know, his role in the Daredevil universe was a real top watch. And so I think having him presumably back as, you know, Wilson Fisk, I would really enjoy.
Just to do some live planning on the pod, do you want to add this to the joint watches or? Okay.
Yeah.
Get it on the list. Well, I'm really keen to check this one out. Okay. What else have we got here? So Stranger Things season 5 has officially begun production, which is great news after all of the various writing, actors, strikes and delays. It's officially kicked it off. So I imagine we'll be getting season 5 probably in 2025. So it'll be great to kind of start to close out that series.
It's incredible. That series started in 2016. You know, with these kids, and here we are 2025, you know, 9 years later. Can't wait to see where they go next, because
and look at those kids as well. Like, those kids are like superstars now, and yeah, they're right, like they're leading movies and various shows, which I think is pretty epic.
Special was the word. That's the word I use. It's a special show, Stranger Things, and so it's exciting.
We've also had the Golden Globes. So a few, I'm not going to go through the entire list here, but a few kind of, I guess, shout outs. So Oppenheimer did pretty well here. So Cillian Murphy, best actor in a drama motion picture. We've had Barbie for a cinematic and box office achievement. Succession has best TV drama. We've had Christopher Nolan as director of a motion picture for Oppenheimer. We've had, like, speaking of Succession as well, so Kieran Culkin as, you know, best actor in a drama TV series. Ali Wong and for Beef, like, the Bears won a bunch of awards. Like, what's been quite good about the Golden Globes, Paul, is it's kind of, I think, confirmed some of our choices for HMP top 10 TV shows of 2023. There's a few classics in there that have also won awards. So not only have they got a Golden Globe, they've got a Half Measures Laminated Certificate to go with it. So,
yeah, it's suspicious though, isn't it? It is suspicious that they announced the Golden Globes just after we've done our top 10. It's yeah, just suspicious.
It is. Look, there probably should be a bit more consultation, maybe some fees, but we'll see. Anyway, and then the final bit of news I just wanted to talk about is I was just looking at an article before on IGN, and they sort of talk about the biggest TV shows coming in 2024. And I just thought I'd run through a couple because it's just kind of a reminder, actually, of some of the good things we've got to look forward to this year. And I think it's good because sometimes you're sort of looking down the barrel of the year, thinking, what are we going to be watching? What's kind of on the radar? We've obviously got the Echo, the first Disney Plus Marvel TV show of the year. We've got a Mr. and Mrs. Smith TV show coming with Phoebe Waller-Bridge. And why is his name escaping me? Donald Glover, which I think is, you know, sign me up. Those two are fantastic actors.
100%.
We've got Avatar, The Last Airbender, which will be fantastic. We've got Shogun, which will be, you know, Paul, I love anything sort of Japanese, samurai, feudal Japan. I'm all about it. We've got Invincible Season 2. We've got a new Fallout TV show. We've got House of the Dragon Season 2. We've got Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. Yeah. We've got Star Wars The Acolyte. We've got Star Wars Skeleton Crew. We've got, what else is on this list here that might be of interest? We've got the final season of the animated Harley Quinn TV show, which is Season 5. We've got The Penguin, we've got Alien, Interview with a Vampire Season 2, the final season of The Umbrella Academy. So there's a lot of things to be looking forward to, and I'm already hoping that some of these potentially could be early contenders for the top 10 of 2024.
I just noted them all into our potential Watch of the Weeks as well, because there's a lot of good content there by the sounds of it.
Indeed, indeed. But that is me, Paul. Any other news that you'd like to share?
No, you've really covered off most of the things I was going to talk about. The only other thing I've seen but haven't seen is the news, I think it's the final trailer for the Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live, the new Rick Grimes Michonne series is dropped its trailer. And so I'm not going to watch that, but I know it's out there. And it's just because we've still got Fear the Walking Dead to finish. I said to you, I'm saying, you've still got to do the dishes. Is the look you just gave me.
That's how it feels like every time I look at the list of like, all right, what do I need to watch next? And I see it down the bottom of that list. I'm like, I don't want to do the dishes.
That's how my manager looks at my performance review. It's always the last one to be done. It's always like, no, I can't deal with that yet. Not yet.
All right. So we must be moving on to peak performance.
And mailbag, Dan.
Mailbag. Of course.
Unless you've cut the mailbag.
No, I've cut mailbag, Steve. Bring it back.
We've actually got a few things to catch up on. So I'll just go through some of the highlights. So we had the Wrexham goalkeeper, Dale Morgan, share our Welcome to Wrexham season 2 review on Instagram. That was pretty cool. Peter Godden from Tawa in Wellington said he tuned in to the podcast for the first time specifically to hear what the verdict was on Frasier, the latest season, the reimagined, if you like. He'd started watching and then gave up, apparently. So he says, I'm a great fan of Frasier, witty, sharp, clever, etc., etc., but the new Frasier, not so much. We tried a couple of episodes some weeks ago, were disappointed, gave up. Gave it another go this evening based on your half recommendation of the episode with Lilith. I still turned that off halfway through. I couldn't deal with it. Such a shame. So it's good to see it's not just me that had a bad time with that, but there we go. What else have we got here? Matt from Nelson was trying to put together a top 10 for 2023 as well. We've inspired a few people. I think when we have our last two pods as the top 10, we always get a bit of that. So far, he's struggling, but he says Bodies is definitely on that list. Ian from Miami, back in the mailbag, he gave Blue Eye Samurai a listen based off of your review, and he said that is 100% a top 10 for 2023 for him. Michael from North Carolina, someone you can always rely on for a full measure, he gave us his full top 10 for the year, so I'm going to read this in reverse order. Extraordinary, Fall of House of Usher, so another reason for you to get in there, Dan. Poker Face, Silo, Beef, Wrestlers, sounds like a show for you maybe, Dan. Deadlock, The Glory, number 2 was Bodies, and top show of the year was Mrs. Davis. So going to give that an add in. Both Michael and myself both don't have For All Mankind on our list because we haven't finished it yet. But that was a top show for us, so it'll be interesting to see when I finish that, where that winds up. What else have we got here? So in terms of the, you know, the creatives, actors and directors and so on behind the things we review, we had Edwin Lee Gibson, who plays Chef Abraham in The Bear, sent us a thank you for our review and shared our review. We had the creator of Blue Lights, Declan Lawn, plus a couple of the new recruit cops from the show, Nathan Braniff and Hannah McLean, share our review as well. Happy Valley Season 3, Amit Shah, who played the dodgy pharmacist, he shared our review. Blue Eye Samurai, the voice actor Alan Yu, he shared the review as well. Ali Shu from Creamery, New Zealand on Air, they all shared our reviews of the show. So that was great. And finally, from The Gone, we had a whole bunch of them. The producers, Yvonne Donohoe, Anna McPalin, Katie Holly, and then from the cast, Scott Wills, Cassina Campbell, the lead actress, Akushla Tarakupe, all shared our review. And then we had actress Rachel Morgan, who played Siobhan, who the character was all centered around her character. She DM'd us and said, thank you very much for the shout out, the support and kind words. Do not go unnoticed. Sending love from across the pond here in Ireland. So that was nice. Finally, in the mailbag this week, another new listener, Dan. We had Christina from Wellington. First time listener. Heard about the top 10 and decided to listen to both episodes back to back whilst cleaning her kitchen. She said it was the perfect companion for and made the job way less boring. Was so inspired, she then went back to listen to our previous top 10 from 2022 and has then used our website, Praise Be, to find our review of Mare of Easttown to listen to that review as well. She says she's enjoyed all the podcasts she's listened to so far. And so that's great, Dan. I feel like the top 10 is like a gateway drug into Half Measures to lead you into weekly listens.
My favorite thing is someone just joined the podcast, joined our Discord channel, and she's mentioned she's still working through her top 10 list. And so there's no time cut off for sending us through your top 10 list.
Correct.
But please do send them through, because I love hearing what other people have as their top 10. Like, even just hearing Sadal's list, like, there's a few TV shows that I, you know, either haven't made it our ways or not on my radar at all. So it's just always great to hear. And it's much harder than I think people kind of realize when you start to really try to crunch it down. What order do you put them in?
Correct.
What are you going to cut out? So please do send them through.
It's not as easy as we make it look, right?
Indeed. Indeed. This is a professional job. Is that the right word? Activity?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
Side hustle.
Let's move on then to our final feature of the pod this week, the peak performance. And so this, if you haven't listened before, this is where Dan and I take turns each week to choose someone from the movie and TV industry and look back at their career and try to pick out what we think is their best performance. And this week, Dan, we have Melanie Lynskey.
New Zealand's own, Taranaki's own, Melanie Lynskey is, she is someone who has, she's done it, Paul. She's made the leap. She's moved. She's done great stuff here in New Zealand. She's gone overseas. She's smashed it. She's got an amazing career behind her. And I think she's someone who just keeps getting better and better with the roles that she takes on. She's done so many great stuff. She deserves to be celebrated. So great to have her on the list. Honourable mention, I'm going to start with something a little bit recent. I'm going to start with The Last of Us and her role as Kathleen Colan. And I just think she's someone who just has such a great screen presence, and she can be a villain or a hero or kind of a loving mother or whatever role it is that she needs to play. She really shows up, and I think in The Last of Us is a great example of that. But for my peak performance, I can't go past the 1994 classic Heavenly Creatures. It's such a grim tale, a New Zealand story, alongside Kate Winslet, directed by Peter Jackson. Melanie Lynskey's role as Pauline is both disturbing, fantastic, and I think really kind of catapulted her career to where it is today. So The Last of Us and Heavenly Creatures. How about yourself?
Great choices, Dan. I felt like I should really have had Heavenly Creatures in mind too, and I'm so glad that you did, because the truth is I have not seen that film for decades, and I just can't remember enough to genuinely say that it would be my pick. I'm not saying it isn't, I just can't remember enough. So great shout there. The honorable mention for me is the same as you, bit of recency for me too, in The Last of Us. I feel like, you know, we both had this, you know, in our top 10 show last week, you know, and so her performance in this definitely adds to this argument being such a highly rated show. She's a really, sort of as you said, sort of an understated villain. She's really sort of chilling and cold, but seemingly, you know, has her reasons for doing what she's doing. She has that sort of, look, I'm doing this for the right reasons, and I could be your friend if you thought like I do, which is a very modern political view, I think. But I found that really good, and I have no idea how it compares to her character in the game, if that exists in the game, but yeah, I thought really, really good in The Last of Us, so that's my honourable mention as well. But the peak performance for me, the role I enjoy the most in a movie, I've seen quite a few times actually, really enjoy it, it's possibly not that well known, but it's from 2009, and it's The Informant. She stars in this one alongside Matt Damon. This is the whistleblower story about the price fixing conspiracy in the mid 90s, and she's got quite pivotal in this. She's the one that convinces Matt Damon's character he has to go to the FBI. She's the driving force behind it, and she's really good in the role of Ginger. And from all accounts, whilst this is based on a true story, not everything is accurate, as always is the case, but her portrayal is sort of widely regarded as being sort of the most legit. And so I think that's quite important in any sort of based on a type movie. Great chemistry alongside Matt Damon. I probably haven't seen it for a wee while now, so it's probably due a rewatch, but yeah, just really, really so convincing in that role. So yeah, Last of Us and The Informant for me, Dan.
Very good, very good. I guess that brings us to the end of another episode of the Half Measures podcast.
It does indeed. Thank you for listening in. As always, let us know your peak performance for Melanie Lynskey. And if you have any suggestions of what we should be watching or any thoughts on Rebel Moon, let us know at halfmeasurespodcast.com or on our social media.
Also, a very special shout out to our Patreon producers, Samara Wanenking, Diana Kanawa, Trisha Brady, and Michael Chalmers. If you too would like to become a Patreon producer of the TV show, of the podcast, then you can find those details in the show notes below. But until next week, everyone, adios.